Coming up, I got Trey Johnson, lottery pick in the 2025 NBA draft, breaking down his game, talking about his journey and what's next for him in the NBA. Before that, I'm going to talk about game one between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We watched game one of the West Finals between the Thunder and the Wolves. OKC won this one 114-88. Not the most competitive game at all. I want to offer four thoughts about this game one and what it could mean for the series moving forward. With number one, SGA's grifting. Everybody's talking about this on social media, on every podcast, including this one. I think it's less of a big deal, as a lot of people do. He had 31 points on 10 of 27. He took 14 free throws in the game, made 11 of them. He got fouled 13 times. One of those was reversed after review. So the remaining 12, I thought five of them were legit callable fouls that made sense to blow the whistle. Seven of them, it looked like the regular season. They shouldn't have been called, especially given the amount of contact OKC's allowed on defense and all teams have been allowed this entire postseason. Most of those whistles were blown weirdly by referee Mark Lindsay. Like, I don't know why this one official is blowing the whistle on all of those. I think the NBA should punish him. No more. Get out of this series. No finals for you, Mark Lindsay. But I say I think this is a bit overblown. A, because OKC won 114-88. I mean, like, you take away all his free throws, OKC is still winning that game 103-88. Like, let's be real. It's a huge differential. It wasn't just because of SGA. But I don't think it's as big of a deal as people are making it out to be, because there's bigger issues for Minnesota here than SGA flopping and flailing his arms around. That's a different discussion. The bigger issue from a game standpoint for Minnesota is their shot profile. Anthony Edwards, this entire postseason, is shooting only 44.8% at the rim in the half court. He had zero attempts in game one at the rim in the half court. Shea had five. How many of those do you think Shea made? Five at rim attempts in the half court. He made one of them. He made one of five at-rim shots, and he's shooting even worse than Ant at the rim in the half court, 43.6% this entire postseason. The difference between them is Shea attacks over and over and over again. Doesn't matter if he's making or missing. He just keeps going. We know Shea leads the NBA in drives per game. That's a discussion. It was really a huge differential in game one, though. 28 drives to the rim in game one for SGA. Seven drives for Anthony Edwards, 28-7. And despite all that, OKC has 26 total free throws in the game. Minnesota has 21. Not the biggest differential. Anthony Edwards, seven total free throws in the game, 14 for SGA. Ant's got to drive more. He's got to use that strong frame in order to get into the basket. When I had Dane Moore on my podcast earlier this week, he talked about this, how Ant needs to take a page out of SGA and look to draw contact. Like, if they're going to call it, you're a star. You got to do it. You can't be settling for a bunch of pull-up mid-rangers, a bunch of pull-up threes. You got to get into the paint. And to me, that's this big story of the game. Anthony Edwards needs to elevate his play. He can't be 18 points on 5 of 13. Not enough shots, not enough drives. He's going to be better, and so does Minnesota as a whole. And this is my second point, more on the shot profile here. The differential in this game was crazy. Like, this was wild to watch here. Some numbers for you. The Wolves took 61.4% of their shots from three. 22.9% of their shots were in the paint. Basically the inverse for Oklahoma City. OKC had 56.1% of their shots in the paint, 25.6% of their shots from three. So OKC had basically as many shots in the paint as the Wolves had threes. To me, like, this is the story of the game here. We've seen OKC throughout this postseason, Denver, you know, clogging the paint, playing a lot of zone, forcing them to be shooters. And yet in this game, OKC recorded the second least percentage of threes in the entire postseason. Only the Rockets in that Game 7 against the Warriors had fewer amount of threes. Minnesota recorded the most percentage of threes in the second most percentage of threes in the postseason. Only the Celtics in Game 1 against the Knicks, that 20-point blown lead. Remember when they took like 80 threes in the game? Only the Celtics in that Game 1 had more threes than Minnesota had in Game 1 against Oklahoma City. So can Minnesota win this way on offense? I don't believe so. I think they'll lose the series very quickly if they continue to shoot this frequency of threes. 12 threes for Dante DiVincenzo. A number of hero ball shots, early clock pull-up threes. Like, what the hell are you doing, dude? Stop trying to be a hero here. 0-for-7 for Naz Reid. He's going to have better nights, I would think. Like, he's shooting 40% from three in the postseason. He should have better games, but he also hasn't had like a good high volume Naz Reid style scoring game since around game one of last round. And then Nickeil Alexander-Walker, 2 of 9 from three, way too many three pointers for Alexander Walker. Still not as many mentions as him being SGA's cousin. I mean, we get it. Like, how many times in that game? I think 10 plus times we heard SGA and Nickeil Alexander-Walker are cousins. We get it. It's enough. No more. No more for the rest of the series. But with Minnesota, I don't think they can win that way on offense. I don't think they can win that way on defense either. If you're allowing OKC to get into the paint that much, you got to bank on OKC to be a higher volume three-point shooting team. Do what Denver did. Pack the paint. Play some zone, take some pages out of what Dallas did last year when they beat OKC in the second round. And I think this part of this is on Chris Finch, the Minnesota head coach. Gobert gets two early fouls in the game. He immediately gets put on the bench. He had no fouls the rest of the game. I thought he pulled Gobert too early, should have stuck with him, and maybe that would make a difference moving forward in the series if they can get Rudy Gobert out there for 30-plus minutes and not just 21. But the fouling thing speaks to my third point here, OKC's depth advantage, because OKC, man, Finch feels like he has to pull Rudy because he has an 8-man rotation. Minnesota, they only have so many fouls that they can actually give in a game. Whereas OKC, like, you got Dagnall pulling out Kenrich Williams, dusting him off the bench, plus 19 in 10 minutes in the third quarter. OKC's got depth. Jalen Williams, who was pivotal last round against Denver, didn't even play in game one. He was the only DNP for Oklahoma City. So for the Thunder, if Caruso gets into foul trouble, you know, grabbing Ant, you know, aggressively defending Ant on the perimeter, well, they can play Kayson Wallace more. They can put Jalen Williams on Caruso's guy. Aaron Wiggins, for that matter, he can play more. OKC's playing 10 guys, but in reality, they're 13 guys deep. And that's part of what allows them to defend with the aggression and the intensity, play in, play out that they do. Part of them is knowing that the officials are not going to blow the whistle every single play. Part of them is doing that because they know even if the referees are blowing the whistle, they have a bunch of bodies and a bunch of guys they can throw out there. Whereas Minnesota, like, Jaden McDaniels falls out in the game. Like, if McDaniels is out, you're going to the next guy. If DiVincenzo's in foul trouble, if Conley's in foul trouble, if all of these guys, Gobert, Minnesota's going to Jalen Clark or Terrence Shannon or Josh Minot, these unproven guys or older, past their prime guys like Joe Ingles. The Wolves are shallow. The Thunder are as deep as it absolutely gets of the remaining four teams. And that versatility is my fourth thought here after game one. OKC just looks far more versatile. That's obvious watching them as they won 68 games all regular season. It's been clear throughout the postseason and very clear again in game one because Isaiah Hartenstein plays only 20 minutes. He averaged 27.5 minutes last round. OKC can play two bigs. They can play one big, Chet Holmgren. Like, the stats don't pop up off the screen. He had 15 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks. I thought Chet was awesome in the game. He played great defense, played great offensively, did everything he had to do, and he's the one big out there for a lot of those lineups. And so OKC can play with different lineups, different configurations out there. They can play with a bunch of guards. They can play with a bunch of length. They can play with two bigs or one big. They can beat you taking half their shots in the paint. They can beat you taking half their shots from three. And so I understand so much of the discourse is about Gildas Alexander, he's flopping and flailing. Like, this isn't pure basketball. You know, I get it. I get that. I completely understand it. Some of the fouls are annoying. I wish he didn't do it, but I understand why he does it when he's getting rewarded. To me, that's more on the referees rewarding a guy for flopping more than I'm going to blame a guy for taking advantage of stupid refs. In reality, I wish the conversation were so much more about OKC as the basketball team. This is a deep team with no weaknesses. They can shapeshift. They can win playing any style at all. And they just pantsed a grizzled, experienced Minnesota team that was in this spot last year that almost had a week of rest, a week of time to prepare for them. But the reality is there's no preparing for the Oklahoma City Thunder, because OKC can be whatever they want to be or whatever they have to be on any given night. And that's why they're going to win the series. I picked them in six. Maybe it won't go that long unless Minnesota addresses some of these things that were major concerns in game one. And they're going to win the series, whether SGA is getting 14 free throws a game or zero free throws a game. That's my main takeaway after this game one. Tonight, we got game one of the Pacers and the Knicks. I previewed that series last episode. Official prediction, I'm going Knicks in seven. It's a very close to a coin flip series in my book. Tomorrow, Thursday, on my podcast, I got Jonathan from Knicks Film Room. First time I think him and I have ever done a podcast together. Very excited to talk about that game with him. I know he's hoping for a Knicks victory, but we'll be breaking that down as well. And then after OKC Minnesota game two on Thursday night, I'm going to be recording about that game on Thursday night with Tom Haverstraw. So whenever that releases, Thursday night, overnight, Friday morning, whenever you get to the podcast, that will be out with Jonathan and Tom. Today, I've got an interview with Trey Johnson. Trey Johnson, lottery pick in the 2025 NBA draft, averaged 19.9 points per game at Texas, shot 39.7% from three on 6-point attempts per game. Measured in at the combine last week at 6'5 without shoes, 6'11 wingspan. Trey Johnson, gonna go as high as three. I think he should go as high as two, but in all likelihood, as high as three. Probably as low as five. Maybe you could see him slip into seven or eight, but this dude's legit, man. I loved my conversation with him. We talked about his shooting ability. He mentions a Ray Allen comparison, like prime Ray Allen, pre-Celtics big three Ray Allen. He made 40.8% of his threes off the catch last year, according to Synergy, and 38.4% of his dribble jumper threes. He's a bucket getter. He's versatile. Made 24 of 48 of his shots off screens, 18 of 36 of his shots out of the post. Just to give you an idea of his scoring versatility, the fact that you have a guard, a two-guard style guy who can post up, who can ISO, who can come off of screens. And one of the things I think you're really going to enjoy, if you're even just a draft nerd or a fan of a team hoping to draft Trey Johnson, the playmaking aspect. I asked him a lot about his playmaking because at Texas, dude's a bucket getter. Asked to score, took a lot of shots. In high school, he was asked to be more of a playmaker. So we got into that. He's funny. He's insightful. Really loved the conversation with Trey Johnson. So I hope you enjoy it too. Here's Trey Johnson. Trey Johnson, Texas freshman, top five projected pick in the 2025 NBA draft, averaged 19.9 points per game at Texas last year. Trey, thanks for joining me, man.
Appreciate you for having me, for sure.
How would you describe your game to somebody who's never watched you play?
I'd say a playmaker, also a scorer, though. I can make plays for others, but also score for myself. That's kind of one way I describe it.
I mean, I feel like with you, like if I asked an NBA scout that, it'd be like score, bucket getter. And you say playmaker first. Why is that?
Yeah, I can score, but I also use my scoring just to make plays. It's somebody got to help, and somebody's going to be open. So I also use it just to make plays.
And I feel like with you, like at Texas, your primary role was to score. But when you watch, you know, Trey Johnson at Link Academy, you see more passing, more creation for others. Do you think that's fair to say with like the differential and your role and responsibilities?
Yeah, I just felt. For that Link Academy team, I had to take a step back from scoring and just facilitate to help make others better or help make others impact the game. Because my junior year coming back, I was averaging like 20-something and then go to Link and average 15. I wasn't even shooting the same amount of shots, but I just Uzoma was the best for the team for sure.
Who was on that Link Academy team with you?
LeBaron, Filon, Jasper Johnson, Jalen Shelley, James Brown, Andre Iguodala Jr.
Andre Iguodala Jr., all these second generation players, crazy.
Yeah, we had TJ. We had a lot of good. We had a lot of great guys. T.O., Brandon Benjamin. We had a lot of great players.
These are good players. I mean, Filon could be a first round pick, or, you know, we'll see if he goes back to Bama as well. But this week at the combine,
he actually just announced he's not going back to Bama.
Oh, he's not going back. He announced that.
I just saw that today.
Wow. I mean, you got like Boogie Flan going to Florida.
He's going to Florida?
Yeah, he's going to Florida.
I've not seen that. Yeah.
So that's a good we're bringing news to each other.
Yeah.
We're like Shams and Woj.
But they hate each other.
They do. We like each other. Yeah. At least so far. Yeah. Maybe in the NBA, I might say something critical of you and you'd be like, fuck this guy.
Nah.
It might happen. Who knows? But I mean, I love your game then. Like, because I think with you, like I said, you're clearly a bucket getter. You're one of the best shooters in this whole draft class, if not the best, with what you do off the dribble, the movement shooting, the way Texas ran you off of movement actions. Like, clearly you're undeniably an elite three-point shooter. That goes without saying. But I think the reason why teams have you like likely top five pick is because of all the other stuff. It's because of the creation ability and your ability as a passer. And so with you, I'm curious, like, when you project your game forward into the years to come in the NBA, like, how do you see your role? Like, because so many teams use multiple ball handlers. Yeah. Do you see yourself as one of those guys who's an engine of a team, or like someone who's like sharing the rock and playing different roles because of your shooting ability?
I feel like I could either, it could go either way. I feel like also being used as a two-way more as I get into my career for sure. But just like either way, whatever the team needs to win, it could also just change night to night.
What was your most clutch shot this season of the many that you had?
I don't know. I actually don't know. It depends on what games we won. I had a few clutch ones in the A&M game coming back at the house. That was probably one. Towards the end, big man flipped it back to me. Not even a big man. I ain't going to say that about Kent. Stretch guard. Toss the ball to me. That shot.
Every big wants to be a guard nowadays.
No, he's actually a guard, though. I just said big because he's bigger than me. But yeah, he had tossed it to me and I just made a shot. I think it was like the tight or cut it to one or something like that. That's probably a big shot.
And you measured, speaking about size, 6'4 and three quarters height, and your wingspan 6'10 and 1/4. So good length.
Yeah.
Okay, good size. How do you assess your current defensive ability right now?
It's up and down right now. Just playing through injuries and stuff. That's kind of how I looked at it. But I'm looking at it over. I'm looking at it without the injuries though. Like, I'm looking at it over the course of the season, how I guarded different guys and stuff like that. It's not bad, but wanting to play defense is the right step. Most people don't want to play it, so I've been taking the right steps forward.
I mean, I feel like that's the interesting thing with you is like you bring intensity to the floor. You bring emotion. Clearly, like, you cheer for your teammates. You get fired up yourself. I think there's like a level of care and buy-in that. Guys like that, like, sometimes a defense, even if, like, in my opinion, even if a guy defends like at an average or, you know, even poor level at college, if they clearly care, like, odds are that guy's going to figure out and become the best they can on defense in the NBA. And like, likely you're not going to be some, you know, high usage guy as a rookie.
Yeah.
The coach is going to ask you to play defense in order to get minutes, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. And that's a one way to get on the court. So I'm for sure, that's for sure something I'm going to have to do.
Who would you compare yourself to, either current or former NBA players?
I kind of like the Ray Allen comparison growing up. I used to get that one a little often. And then going back and actually watching Ray Allen when he was in his prime and his younger with Milwaukee, I actually like that comparison.
The young Ray Allen is what comes to mind for me as like, you know, like a, you know, high-end comparison for you. Because it's like young Ray Allen, explosive, getting to the basket. You know, he could score from mid-range. He could facilitate. It's not like Boston, Miami Ray Allen where, you know, he takes a back seat. It's like to win games and all that. But with Ray Allen, I think like the at-rim finishing ability was like an underrated like skill for him when he was the best shooter in the league.
Yeah.
Or one of the best shooters. With you, how do you assess your current at-rim finishing ability and where do you need to get better at when it comes to driving to the cup?
They want me to dunk more. And I feel like the combine just showed like I knew everybody, like, if you know me and you see me like work out or whatever, you know I'm athletic. But I feel like the combine just showed it to everybody that I'm athletic. So they want me to finish and try to dunk more at the rim. I finished pretty solid at the rim. It's just more about getting there and getting to the free throw line is more biggest thing to me.
I have your stats here. I think you finished in the half court 46% on layups.
Yeah, it could be a great number. Not a great number.
Why was it low?
I don't know. Go back and watch, I could tell you. But just overall, I
think it's shot selection a little bit, like you're having to shoot more, like, and you can't pick and choose.
It possibly could have been that. Possibly could have been that. But it was something I was working on for sure, and I did shoot a lot of shots.
When it comes to at-rim finishing in the NBA, like who do you think is the best at-rim finishers in the league? Who are the guys you'll try to watch to figure out how they score inside?
Kyrie's probably the best in the paint finisher. Darius Garland. A lot of great finishers in the NBA are smaller guards. Guards have been having to deal with that since they was young, having to worry about finishing over taller defenders. So guys like Darius Garland and Kyrie have great touch around the rim. So those are two guys.
For you, like, because of your size, did it become more of a thing at the college level than the high school level for you?
What you mean?
For you, was it easier at the high school level compared to the college level at rim finishing?
I wouldn't even say that. I wouldn't even say probably it was easier just because it's a different level when you're playing against older guys now. But yeah, but at some point, yeah. But it probably wasn't even that.
If you could download a move from any player, current or past, and install it into your own game, what would that move be?
I wouldn't even call it a move. Just SGA's way of getting fouled, whatever you call that.
Some people would call it grifting.
Yeah, we're going, I need the grifting move.
I mean, with that, like, it's almost, I think it was middle of last season or maybe the season before that, Mark Daigneault, the OKC head coach, had like this rant in front of the media about how SGA leads the NBA in drives.
Yeah.
But he's like middle of the pack in free throws. And like shortly after that, referees started giving SGA respect on those drives. Sometimes it's at the mercy of the officials and then respecting like the star treatment player.
Yeah.
You know?
It could be that. And also he could have just got better over time.
Yes.
With how to draw fouls.
Why is that what you would want to take?
That's 8 free throws. That's 8 free points a game. Why would I want that?
You're like a 90% free throw guy, right?
I can make it 100 if I'm only shooting 8.
Well, getting in a rhythm over the game, that percentage goes up?
Yeah, it's not even that. It's just you just added 8 points with nobody guarding you. Now just think about the shots you make. Now just think if it's a night where you shot 20 shots, but you made 15 plus the 8 free throws that you shot. It looks a lot better than you having to go try to shoot, make 9 shots and you done shot 20.
So you like watching the Thunder?
Yeah, just, I was watching them the other night with Denver. I think it was like game 2. It was game 3. It was one of the games. They were playing super fast. Like fast, that's as fast as I ever seen a team play.
Mm-hmm. What do you like watching about them?
Really just the speed.
Speed?
Like I was watching Denver trying to keep up with the same tempo and the same pace. It was just turnover after turnover, and that was just making it worse.
Denver wants to slow it down.
Yeah, they
it's like these different types of styles of play going at each other.
I don't even know what they probably do with Nikola, but shoot, they have to slow it down. Okay, she's not, I don't like going to keep running up and down with them and win.
Who are some other teams you like to watch in the NBA?
The Celtics, just like their philosophy with all the three-pointers. And then they have great players like, just their team in general, just watching all the guards from Drew to Tatum, Brown, and then Derrick White.
You got
Peyton Pritchard coming off the bench. It's just a lot of great talent.
I mean, like, it's too bad with the Tatum injury.
Definitely.
Dude was having one of the best playoff games of his whole career, and then that unfortunately happens. And, I mean, it's crazy, right, how quickly, like, windows can shut.
Yeah.
It's like Boston, obviously, they had a lot of winning the last 7-8 years going back to, like, when you're like 12 years old. It's like Isaiah Thomas is still there, right?
Yeah, still there.
Like rookie Tatum, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, they've been winning a long time and then they finally get a title and it's like, well, maybe they'll go back to back. And I don't know. It's like it really puts into perspective like how like you got to take advantage of the time it's there. Do you feel that kind of like in your own life where you're like, oh my God, I'm here at the combine. I got to put my all into this and put everything I have into this opportunity I have.
Not even. It's just like that was automatic. Just putting my all into it. Doing the best I could just because it was a dream of mine and just because this is like my job. That was just the automatic for me. Me just being here is just soaking up the experience of being here for sure while still trying to enjoy it but still compete and have fun.
Now, you mentioned that you like the Celtics style with a lot of threes.
Mm-hmm.
The Do you like value analytics? Like, do you use numbers at all? Because that's what drives their style with the threes and layups.
Nah, I don't really look into it because I'm not against it. But my game, if you looked at my game, you think it was against it because of how many mid-range shots I shoot. They don't like that. But I was telling somebody the other day, like, it's either if they're hitting, they'll blow you out. If they're not, it's a close game. If you're good with that, then shoot, I'm good with it then.
Do you think, I mean, like, you know, there's certain teams that want to play more like that. If you get drafted to a team, they're like, hey, Trey, like, save the mid-range just for the end of the clock, and that's it. Other than that, we want threes and layups. Like, do you feel like you're ready to adapt to that type of style?
Yeah, as long as I get it when it's 6 seconds of the clock and I go shoot one.
Because you want those mid-range attempts sometimes, right?
Shoot, it's a good shot if you work on it, I say. Yeah. Like, if you practice it and perfect it, shoot some of the greats at the best mid-range. So
that's the truth.
Yeah, so if you work on it
over... The mid-range still matters.
Yeah, if you work on it over time, you perfect it, I feel like it's a good shot.
Talk about SGA. I mean, like, he's the king of the mid-range right now. He's like 50% shooter from mid-range.
Yeah.
That's a good shot.
It's a great shot.
It's a good shot anytime on the shot clock, right?
I wouldn't say anytime. If you shoot a mid-range early, they might look at you crazy.
Sure, yeah. But, you know, the numbers is what I mean. Like, 50%, if you're going to shoot that, with 16 seconds on the shot clock, maybe it ends up your best shot in the possession, because sometimes teams can overpass.
Yeah,
most
definitely.
Hunting for threes, right?
Yeah.
Like, you see that,
I've seen that a few times. Or shoot a bad shot because they got the first three. Yeah, it's a lot of different things they'll do for a three-pointer.
What 2K rating would you give yourself right now? Rookie.
It's probably gonna be something low. I just don't know if I want to see it under like 75-74. If it go under there,
it can go up.
It can, yeah, it can go up over time, but I'm a 70.
Oh, do you ever make yourself in 2K? Do you play 2K?
Nah, I don't really play the game like that for real. So somebody had to tell me what my rating was.
Do you play any games?
I don't play the game at
what
all.
What do you do besides basketball?
Something basketball related or
really?
Or,
like, do you watch movies, TV?
Depends.
Music?
I listen to music.
You walked in with headphones. What were you listening to?
I listen to one of my teammates.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, one of my teammates make music.
They make music?
Yeah.
You don't listen, like, you listen to your teammate. You don't listen to someone who everybody knows.
I do. I listen to V's, Lucky, J. Cole, a few different guys.
Who's your teammate that makes music?
DP.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what does he make? Smooth jazz?
Nah, he might get into it one day.
Okay, yeah.
Nah, he's real good. He's versatile, do a lot of different things.
Is there anything that you listen to that would surprise people?
Probably my teammate, yeah.
What types of music, like any genres? Like classic rock?
I listen to a little bit of R&B. I heard a few jazz songs. Nah, jazz, I used to have a teammate. I don't want to butcher where he's from, so I'm not even going to say it, but... He's not from the States, but he listened to a lot of jazz music. And, like, he was my roommate on Team Griffin for a little while. And he used to listen to a lot of jazz music. And that was kind of weird, but it was also good, though. Like, it was good music, actually, but no lyrics.
So, you don't really watch TV, movies, nothing?
Nah, not too much.
No?
My favorite,
you
no,
like,
no, no.
Do you
my
like
favorite,
nature? You
my
go
favorite
for walks?
TV show.
Hmm? Like, nature? Go for walks? Anything like that? No?
I just worked out all day.
He's in the gym.
Just for to go for a walk? Nah, I might if it's an off day, I do something like that. But throughout the week, no, I'm not going on no.
You were
gonna
say your favorite show?
Shameless.
Okay, Shameless. Okay, yeah. What channel is that on? I don't think I've ever seen
Netflix.
It.
You ain't never seen Shameless?
I don't think I have. I couldn't tell you what it's about.
You gotta watch.
How about like reality TV? You got, like watch trash TV at all? No.
Reality TV.
Oh, like Bachelor.
They call it reality, but it's fake.
Like, that's true. You're not wrong. How about Catfish? The show Catfish. It shows like that.
Yeah, I seen episodes of it. Like my favorite, like so called reality show. I used to watch when I was younger. I watched it when I was super young, but I shouldn't watch it. It was Jersey Shore. I watched it like before they started playing it back. I watched it when it's actually going on.
With let's say your team needs to get a stop and you're on the floor, past or present NBA players, which four guys are you picking to get that stop on defense?
To get a stop?
To get a stop.
Who are we going against?
I mean, let's go with OKC.
We're going
to stop
against
OKC, so you can't.
You just want one stop?
You just in one stop.
One missed shot.
Well, it's a last second of the game, you know, or let's get 10 seconds after the shot on the game in the fourth quarter. OKC's got the ball down one.
Okay.
Down one, 10 seconds left, and you guys need to get a stop. Who are you drafting for your team?
This easy. We're going to go. I'm on the team. We're going to go Gary. We're going to go Gary Payton. Me, Tony Allen. Who else are we going to go with? Jaden McDaniels. Five, man. And Shaq.
Shaq.
Yeah, he known for offense, but who can go in the paint and try that?
Test him in the paint.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, there, Isaiah Hartenstein. Chet Holmgren will bounce off of him.
Yeah, no, we're not even worried about just making sure the guards don't drive down there.
That's true, and that's exactly the priority, is stopping SGA or J-Dove.
Yeah, but I don't know if Gary Payton guarded him without fouling.
Let's say they get the bucket and there's 3 seconds left in the clock. Who's subbing into the game with you? Who are your teammates? Now you need a bucket.
That's just going to maybe go shoot with the defenders. all time? We need a bucket?
Yeah. But of course, you're getting the ball, so.
I'm in the ball?
I don't know. I mean, you might not get the ball.
I'm making a team to get the ball.
Yeah, it's your dream, man.
Put facilitators on the court. Mm-hmm. I'll shoot the shot there. We put Jokic at the five. Jokic at the five. Who would go to the one? Shoot, we go Steve Nash at the one. I'm at two. Who would go at three? Who's a good three, man? We'll go Pippen at three. Pippen. Just to space the floor.
Okay.
Just a little different.
Just a little different.
Like he'll cut or something just do something you wouldn't think that'll help winning. Who'll go to the four? Kevin Love, but not the Heat Kevin Love.
Kevin Love.
That one.
Yeah, the guy with dominant post player. Yeah, the one that could shoot, could do everything back then. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
To be invisible.
Invisible.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because you wouldn't be able to see me.
Why do you want to be invisible? So I asked somebody the other day. They said teleportation, because I could get to point A to point B. And
you're living too fast. You're
living too fast. You want to slow things down, then.
Yeah. I just want to be not seen.
Be able to walk through a hotel lobby and nobody stop you, right?
Nobody will stop me if I walk through a hotel lobby.
I mean, you're in the you're here in Chicago, and there's tons of NBA people.
Nobody will recognize.
Nobody recognizes Trey Johnson?
Not if everybody's talking and I just walk through and mind my own business. Nobody.
How do you think your life will change once people do start recognizing you?
It depends if they do.
Of course people are going to recognize you.
I don't think so.
You're going to be a top five pick to some franchise and they're going to be ecstatic about getting Trey Johnson, and they're going to imagine what you can be in your future, and they're going to feel hope, and they're going to see you someday walking down the street.
Yeah.
And Trey, let me get an autograph, a photo. Like, that's going to happen.
But then, you got to put it into perspective. That's 3 weeks, 4 weeks after the draft before I walk outside.
Oh, they'll forget?
Yeah, they're going to forget. It's not even basketball season yet.
Oh, so you're saying you have a little bit of time.
Yeah, I got some time. I got some time.
To be, not invisible, but less visible.
Close enough.
I think that's a good one. What's your weirdest habit?
As much time I spend with myself, probably. Mm-hmm. Spending time with myself, I guess. That's probably the weirdest habit.
Why is that a weird habit?
Because most people like to be around people. Mm. Or like to be in the center of something.
You kind of isolate to focus on yourself, you mean?
Even isolate to focus on myself. Something that's naturally happened.
Mm. Being in the gym alone, you mean? That type of thing.
Yeah, it can be that.
Mm-hmm.
Or just in general.
How else?
How else?
Yeah, you said in general. Do you journal or something like that?
No, just me being by myself. Not with too many friends all the time. Sometimes, though. I like hanging out with my teammates. That's really it. If I'm not with my teammates or nothing like that, I'm by myself.
Your teammates become your best friends, essentially. Yeah. What's your biggest pet peeve?
People smack on gum. I don't like that.
Smacking on gum?
Yeah. Food is okay sometimes.
But some food is so good.
Yeah. So it's okay if you get away with it once or twice. But if you're just with gum and you're just...
I imagine, some girl... For some reason, in a movie, extreme characters like that type of thing, right?
Man, you don't know how many people smack on ground.
Oh yeah, I don't chew gum, so not an issue for me. I probably would be a smacker if I did chew gum, though.
You said you would?
I don't chew gum. Oh. So I'm just saying I probably would be. I don't know.
Nah, you wouldn't.
I have no idea. I don't chew gum though.
You wouldn't be.
What's your biggest motivator?
My biggest motivator. Yeah.
For finding success in this career, this path you've chosen?
I feel like I'm my motivation. I motivate myself. Just because knowing that each day I get a chance to wake up, I can improve. That's probably the motivation. Knowing that I'm not at my ceiling, or I don't know what my ceiling is or what it looks like. So I can just improve every day. That's probably my motivation.
The feeling of improvement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or chance to improve.
Well, what's like in your past, obviously you're always improving. You're just... turn 19, your growth is significant at this point. Was there a moment, you know, where you felt improvement, where you're like, okay, like this is, I got a shot. I can be an NBA player. Was there ever a kind of that key moment in your life?
I say my freshman year, like after my freshman year in high school, probably. I knew I had a shot, knew I had a chance for sure. But growing up, I always thought I had a chance too, though. Even though it was only 60 players getting picked, or still had a chance.
Were you always tall?
Yeah, I was taller than most growing up, and then kind of slowed down, another sped up.
Mm-hmm. I see. So you, like, when you were like, what did you? When did the dream to become an NBA player actually begin? Then, like, how old were you, or did you always have?
Like, I always had the dream.
Oh yeah, when you were like 9 years old, 8 years old,
younger than that. Yeah,
yeah. Does like someone in your family play basketball?
My dad did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did. So he kind of gave and transferred the love and passion for it and determination into me. Kind of.
Must be really happy to see you here in Chicago right now, right?
Yeah, he most definitely is.
Mm-hmm. Are you close with your family?
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
I see. That's any of them out here with you, or you just come out with your...
Not by myself.
Oh, I see. You just can't... You're isolating, right? You're focused on you right here in Chicago.
It's not even that. My brother has some stuff going on. My brother was playing.
How old is your brother? Older or younger than you?
Younger. I got two younger brothers.
Okay, so you're the oldest?
Yeah.
Okay, I see. And like, so you said your dad introduced you to basketball. Like, do you have an earliest basketball memory?
My earliest basketball was probably making my first shot.
Making your first shot?
Yeah.
How old were you then when you made your first shot? Like a little like tyke hoop, like small?
No, I'm talking about like on the 10-foot goal, like actually chunking it up there, making it.
How that far back does your memory go?
I just can't remember that.
Okay. You just remember that.
I don't remember too much back from then.
What was the feeling of joy or something like that?
Yeah, just making the shot and then telling my dad I made it and he didn't see it and having to make it again.
Was there ever a time like you felt doubted by people for choosing this path? Like, was there anybody that's like, Trey, like, what are you doing?
What path?
This path of basketball.
Oh, you mean like picking up the game?
Like, did anybody ever like doubt you and like fuel that fire even more?
Nah, not really. No? Nah, but growing up, I was more of just a shooter. Like, I didn't have all everything else, just a shooter. So that was kind of like, not doubt, but people thought I wouldn't get this far just off of shooting. So I just added everything else, and then everybody could see it.
What do you love most about basketball?
The competition. And then the win. Like, it's no draw in the sport. It's a win or a loss. No tie. I like that.
I mean, I think that shows in your game, man. Like, you're clutching those moments.
Yeah, try to be.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate you joining me today, Trey. Best of luck with everything.
For sure. Thank you.
Appreciate it, man. Big thank you to Trey Johnson for joining me on today's podcast. Thanks to Mike and Amy for producing today's episode. We'll be back again later this week, breaking down the rest of the NBA playoffs. Have a good day. Talk to you later.